Welcome to Sovereign Mind Radio Program. And I'm your host, Sonia Barrett, broadcasting from Inner Light Radio on Wednesday, March 12, 2008, Matrix Time. Join me each week at 7 p.m. as Sovereign Mind explores the nature of the game, the game players, and the strategies in place to hold you spellbound and distracted. Informed guests will bring insight to the silent side of corporations, spiritual concepts, science and technology, and how they're all being used to influence your choices. We want you to participate by calling in at 310-928-7733 or emailing your questions to sovereignmindradio@yahoo.com. Michael Tesarian is our guest today, and he is an author, public speaker, conspiracy theorist, and historian whose topics include religion, symbolism, sidereal astrology, mythology, the occult, and Atlantis. Michael has written a number of books such as Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, produced and presented a six-part DVD, a 60-hour series titled Origins and Oracles, which explores ancient mysteries and forbidden knowledge. And he is also the co-creator of Time Gnosis Personal Timescope System. Michael also supports the conspiracy theory that the United States presidency has always been and still remains a tool of the European royal houses, the Freemasons, the Vaticans, and a mysterious Egyptian black pope. Michael Tesarian, welcome to Sovereign Mind. I'm truly pleased to have you on the program. You are without a doubt a truth seeker. And you continue to not only compile, but to expose unfathomable levels of information related to the control of the masses. Well, Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Sonia. Likewise, great to be on. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Michael, one of the things we're going to really focus on today is Michael has a new video coming up, and it's called Architects of Control, which, of course, we're going to be discussing today. I'm really excited just from seeing clips of it. There's a significant piece in the continued programming and the dumbing down of humanity, which is really what it expresses, showing the levels of science and technology and the way it's all impacting us at this time. So, Michael, I would love for you to give us an overview of the Architects of Control, mass control of the future of mankind.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. The Architects of Control is a series. It's a multi-length DVD series. The first one is coming out in April. It's going to be approximately 2 hours long. And the first one is really is very exciting. I mean, it's a new project for me, and it's especially important because it's really a follow-on from a talk that I did in Los Angeles that happened back, I think, in the summer of 2006, and the response to that little talk, which I didn't even expect was going to be filmed at all. You know, I was just doing a talk for the Granada Forum down there. It turned out that a friend of mine was there, and he filmed it. And it went up on Google, Sonia, and, you know, I think approximately 800,000 people have now seen it.
Wow.
And we've been deluged with, it's incredible, isn't it, the power of the Internet? You know, maybe 100 people were there. You know, I think at the event there was about 100 people, many of them good friends. And, you know, and then you put the same thing up on the Internet, and the next thing you know, nearly 1 million people have seen it. So we've been deluged with, praise about that talk. Again, it was a total fluke. I had no idea that it was going to be filmed. But it seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people. And Well, people, you know, they got a lot out of it, but they also wanted more. They wanted more answers about some of the areas, particularly this whole concept of 2012. Got a lot of questions about that, and it just seemed that there was still a sequel to make. You know, it seemed like, okay, it was great that people saw this, and they got lots of questions about 2012, about the idea that it may not be a utopia that mankind is heading for, like many people in the New Age movement have spoken about, but it may in fact be a dystopia. There's a sort of an alternative theory that in fact we may be heading for some very, you know, negative times ahead, and that the world controllers, the people who are these crime families of the world, literally the architects of control, you know, they have their agenda, which is many hundreds of years old, and we need to know about it. So people wanted more. You know, it's basically from recommendations that I chose to do the first DVD in the new series, as basically a carry-on from this talk that was called 2012 and the Future of Mankind, but to get into more detail. And there's two areas that really stand out of the DVD that we are doing, and that is that, yes, we want to focus on the architects of control. Yes, we want to focus on what they may be doing, what their agendas are, you know, and how they come to be doing all of these heinous things. But my focus is also on the war on consciousness. My focus is also on what is it in humankind, what is it in the human mind that brings this kind of fate into being. Yep. It's not just a simple matter of us, the human race, sitting back passively and saying, well, we got all these evil leaders, my goodness, where did they come from? Is there something also that we're responsible for as human beings, you know? And I know that people like yourself, you know, can really resonate with this. It's not something that the rest of the world is that familiar with. They are mind-controlled into believing, well, bad things just happen outside of me, and I'm just a passive little person sitting here innocently, you know, minding my business, and my goodness, look at all these wars and all this mayhem and all this mass murder, and look at this ecocide and misogyny and whatever else. And, you know, it's just something that happens out there in the theater of the world. And so I wanted to really, again, take the opportunity in this DVD to kind of examine the fact that, well, maybe it's not quite as easy as that, that there could be something within us on an emotional, intellectual, psychic level that also brings the kind of things that we see into being. Can we explore that, you know? And I felt that I covered it more than enough in the little free talk, you know, that we did and went up on Google, but it turned out that people wanted more, so then we wanted to deliver. So we've been working on the last 3 months on that to get the first one out that goes into greater depth about the question of mass control. What are the architects of control up to? What are the likely possibility scenarios that they may be downloading on us? But also what we can do about it. And also what it is in us, you see, that craves a certain kind of tyranny. Because the master-slave relationship is exactly that. It's a relationship. It's something that two sides have sort of signed on for. You know, it's almost like a game of chess in which both parties, you know, they're complicit in this game, in this sort of tryst. And so there's not going to be any awakening as long as it's an us-against-them situation. We have to understand what it is in us on a very, very inherent level that wants this father figures, that wants these Adolf Hitlers and these fascists, you know, these fascists that I've been, you know, studying my whole life, and the fact that they won't go away, and merely wishing they'll go away is again saying, well, you know, it's somebody else's problem. We've got to look into the psychology of ourselves to find out what it is in us that puts these people in power, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think you definitely hit a key area that the majority are not realizing. And you use the word consciousness, and I think that word is being used so loosely now that people don't really get the heart and soul of what that means, because that is where the manipulation takes place. So I am really thrilled that you are bringing it up from the perspective of the interception of human consciousness. Now, in terms of the master players, what you just said, it is a dance that seems to be going on. But who, you know, we always say them. Now, who would you say are the master players? I know there are many levels. There are the master players here on the planet, and then, you know, of course, we can go further on that. But the master players here, are they agents? Are they unaware? Are they just simply being used as well? You know, there's levels to this. What would you say then in terms of the process then of the master players?
Well, it's a really good question, and either one, we haven't completely worked it out yet, but the second or third, DVD in the series of Architects of Control is going to go into this matter that you've just asked very deeply about the actual players themselves. And we will also be exploring that off-world thing again, that it goes up to a certain level of the pyramid, and then, hey, maybe it even becomes sort of disembodied, that maybe perhaps the people that we even see in physical form are, all of them are lower henchmen. How about that? That a lot of people are thinking, you know, oh, where's that hidden human coterie? You know, well, maybe even when you get to that level, they themselves are still puppets of even a more higher disembodied, you know, kind of situation. I'm not saying I totally, you know, I'm a personal believer in that, but it's a fantastic idea, and I've been looking into it, and there seems to be a great deal of evidence for this. So we'll be exploring that in one of the series. But to answer your question, this is a tremendous study of how this pyramid of control works, and how the people in the media, the Blairs, the Bushes, you see, the Thatchers, the Coles, the Mitterrands, you know, the people who get on their bony knees, you know, to the Queen of England and to all her coterie that look, that are controlled basically straight up, are controlled by the British royal family. I mean, that alone can be studied. That has been studied. You have people in the American context like, Lyndon LaRouche, who's a great statesman, and many other people of incredible esteem who've utterly delineated this and will go into the names, who will show you who's sitting on the top boards, who will talk about the crime families, who will also tie it into the Rothschild dynasty, the J.P. Morgans, the Warburgs, you see, the Kuhn and Loebs. There's a certain hierarchy there that has been called Jewish, which is in a way wrong because they're actually Zionist, and there's a big difference between the Jewish person and the Zionist person. That has to be clarified. And then there are it's not a Jewish conspiracy. Because their Gentile crime families are equally, if not more, powerful. So all of these sort of street level terms have to be, you know, organized so that people don't get the wrong idea and then get back into, you know, these prejudicial sorts of fighting, which is exactly what the higher, you know, crime families want. They want us to think it's just, they have their way of creating faux conflicts and faux oppositions so that we never really focus on who are the main, you know, movers and shakers in this. But people who are familiar with my work or with Eustace Mullins's work or with, Dr. John Coleman, you see, or Lyndon LaRouche, we do tell you who the names are, that these creatures in Britain, especially from the Club of the Isles and from the Freemason orders of Grand Orient Freemasonry, all leading back through the 17th century, you see, and all the way back even to the 14th century, and all the way back even through Christianity and the popes, we have these people. And basically they are, in overview, these are individuals who are members who answer to the great noble royal families that have long, you know, polluted and controlled this planet. The Angevins, the Savoys, the Hanoverans, the Habsburgs, names that people in America may not be familiar with, but really should be, because they control, you know, the America through their lieutenants, through the people like Cecil Rhodes and Lord Alfred Milner, and many people who then, the David Rockefellers, you see, who were instrumental in creating the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission and so on and so forth. And then they have their sub-lieutenants, the people that you might see on PBS with their insider smiles, breeding lies, steering people into completely nonsensical political action, which no validity whatsoever. You know, so it moves down the line to the media people and an incredible matrix of power through the media heads like Conrad Black and Catherine Graham. And all of this has been documented. All of this can be proven. And it's very, very important. Also, what my work focuses on is not so much of these individuals as is the shadowy sort of middle characters, the people who are the philosophers, the ones who like to stay within the shadows, who are very camera shy, who are so elite in their mentality in many ways that they think of everyone else as a sort of an underclass. Even the people that serve them are considered totally dispensable and disposable. And so we're looking at a certain group of people like the Colonel Mandel houses, you see, the Sarpys. There's all sorts of the Malthus, Thomas Malthus, and a whole list of other fascinating individuals that, you know, all my life I've studied these people. And all the Blairs and the Bushes, you see, and the Kennedys and all the people that we see in the life, Roosevelt, all, you know, President Wilson, all of these people, they are not the architects of the strategies that they officiate. They're just officiate. They're just like the dumb waiter, you know.
Exactly.
But it's, yeah, they carry out almost like robotically, almost
Absolutely.
Mindlessly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And this was especially the case in regards to people like, you know, Roosevelt, who on paper, I mean, if you went to the campuses of most colleges and universities in the world, if you talk to anybody who grows up on PBS, you know, they'd just drool at the mouth to think that, you know, oh my goodness, FDR, wasn't he just the greatest? You know, tyranny, they don't even know the depth of the tyranny of these individuals. Not that you haven't had great presidents, you certainly have, but I would not in any strength of the imagination, in any of my wildest dreams, put FDR or Wilson or Truman or any of these despots in that category.
Yeah.
Or Kennedy, for that matter.
The deception, I mean, the brainwashing and the continued deception and the mind control process is amazing because, yes, people are in a sleep state. So yeah. They are programmed to believe all of this information and even at levels where people think that they are aware of what's going on. You're mentioning names that a lot of people have never heard of. You've mentioned some names yeah. that I've never even heard of. So, and if you, I'm sure if you continue to dig even deeper, you're going to come up with some names that you still haven't even heard of. I mean, it's just so big. It's huge. And I know there's a quote that I took from some of your information there, and you said, naturally, the power elites and their minions, who apparently believe the world to be their personal playpen, have a great deal to lose should the underclasses, that is, the ordinary men and women of the world, learn of exactly what's going on, the subtle nature of their process. And that is so true. And it's like, the question is, what is it that they really believe that they have to lose? Do they even
everything.
Know exactly what
oh, yeah,
it is
absolutely.
That they have to lose?
Well, first of all, everything that they've got is ill-gotten. And this is not some Michael Tesorian theory when I say that everything they've got is ill-gotten, because the graves of whole nations, whole tribes, these are what we're talking about here are the super imperialists whose family tree, you know, like I said, these crime family tree goes all the way back to Egypt and past that, and they have decimated the world. You see, we here in the luxury of the West forget about the fate of Africa, and we forget about the fate of, you know, Indonesia, and the fate of Vietnam, and the fate of India under the British East India Company and the Dutch East India Company, and the fate of the Native American Indians all over North America under the Hudson Bay Company, and then later on in more recent times the Oppenheimer Trust and all of these sorts of groups that are all controlled from from London. We have a very, very chronic case in this world of historical amnesia, in which we forget that the world has been a bone forest created by these crime families. So they are pathologically brought to right, so to speak, you know, for these abominable crimes. Not the people who committed it, but certainly their descendants. They're also afraid, of course. Everything they do is born out of fear. These people are pathologically fearful. That's why we can call them, rightly so, a hidden elite. They're hidden for a very good reason, and that is they're absolutely pathologically afraid that we, in fact, might start getting it. That their biggest chump, you know, the Joe Sixpack, might, in fact, have a spiritual revelation one day and awaken from that slumber and then toss these people, you know, into the ocean where they belong. And it can, in fact, happen. It's purely, it's more than theory, and I believe we're actually living in the age. We're not approaching the age, we're actually in it right now. We're in fact...
Disclosure.
of disclosure, of a form of awakening, both on an intellectual level and on a political level, but more importantly on a spiritual level, because the weaponry that is needed to destroy these people, who I always describe as sorcerers, their power is not purely political. As I said, it is a war on consciousness. Their war is a spiritual war, ultimately. Well, we're going to need spiritual tools. We're going to need spiritually empowered people who've got a lot of psychic immunity, who've got a lot of emotional independence in the true sense of the word, who are able to consider a world, you see, that is free of these people, because they have been using their, you know, voodoo to mind control everyone into thinking, but you need us. You need us. We're big brother. We're big daddy. You couldn't survive without us. Think what life would be. It's like the end of Conan the Barbarian, where the evil arc, antagonist is telling the protagonist, Conan, that what would you be, my son, without me? I am the wellspring from which you flow. You know, it's like they're mind-controlling you into believing that you need them. This is brought out in the movie V for Vendetta, in which the raging lunatic on the screen says, let these people remember why they need us.
Yeah.
Let them remember why they need Big Brother. I want to make life so punitive, so horrible, so monstrous, that they'll never forget why they put us in power. That was the message to Europe before America even rose. These tyrants made life so unbearable to our forefathers who lived in Europe, you see, and also south of the equator, that people were put in the stocks, people were thrown in dungeons, people were starving in the streets. Look at my ancestors, the Irish. The women were eating seaweed off the beaches because of the famine and the incredible poverty, watching their children die in their arms. Whole nations came under the sword of these people. They made life so unbearable that, of course, they were able to muster a workforce. Of course, they provide these million-dollar ships. Somebody has to stop and think, well, wait a minute, if you can suddenly supply million-dollar ships to be leaving from the coasts of Ireland and Southampton, how come you couldn't translate that money into food to save the Irish people? Is there something missing here we're not seeing?
Absolutely. I want to...
Well, you're damn right there's something, of course there's something that people haven't been seeing. Absolutely. Those ships didn't come laden with food for the Irish people. They came empty as slave ships to take a whole crowd of workers over to work the wheel in the new country of America. In fact, the height of the famine, one last anecdote on that, is that the height of the famine, the Queen of England gave more to her dog's home than she donated to the Irish people that year.
Michael, I want to give our listening audience an opportunity to call in at 310-928-7733 or email their questions to innerlightradio at yahoo.com. You've said some very powerful things, because what we have, yes, is global slavery. And it's so interesting, because the process of turning us against each other has definitely distracted everyone from realizing the slavery process that everyone is under, unless you're in control. And even those in control, like as you said, at different levels, are themselves slaves.
Beautiful.
So it definitely is an interesting process. Now, one of the things that I want to ask you about is I'm very big on the concept of technology, because technology is science, and science is, of course, on another level, it is magic. It is being able to manipulate energy, being able to utilize that in many different ways. So what I want to ask you is, in your research, more specifically, what have you discovered anything in terms of ancient technology, Egypt, Atlantis? Because I feel like we're living that again. We are discovering technology again, and it's going to be the detriment.
Well, of course, it's like any Excalibur. It has two sides. Mm-hmm. It has two sides to it, and it's a weapon in the arsenal of our enemies, of course. Going back to the time when, you know, the roots of technology is in man's desire to basically outdo the female, because the female of the species seem to have this magical power to create children, and therefore seem to be further up the ontological ladder, closer to the gods, in other words, who had given the female sex the ability to reproduce children in the same way that God had reproduced man, right? So man, subconsciously, for one of many reasons probably, had a sort of a primal envy And compounded over the centuries, over the millennia, in fact, this envy became enormous. And man's answer then to this creative, mysterious, creative power of the female was to basically replicate nature through what we now call technology. Science and technology is man's sort of, you know, creative way to rival and surpass the female. So the roots of technology are in a sense quite dark and quite foreboding. However, that doesn't rule out that technology and science can also be used, you see, positively, as it has been by much more adjusted people who don't feel that way. In fact, even using a paintbrush to create a canvas, a beautiful piece of artwork, is a form of technology, as you said. Art mm-hmm. and technology, art and magic, ultimately, you know, they're connected. It's not about the technology itself, it's about the kind of consciousness that's using it and what it might be being used for. You know, all the way down to the newsprint, all the trees that have to be destroyed, you see, to just tell us a bunch of nonsense about some football team or some drag queen or some other nonsense that's going on in the world. So there's two sides to everything. And I think that we're in the age that also that technology can be used very positively. In my own life, see the, you know, ultimate results of that. Like I said, you know, 750,000 people watching a simple little, you know, Google thing that was put up on my behalf. I mean, my goodness, could I ever fit a hall? You know, what? Right. Tell me what city in the world I could go to and fill a hall with 750,000 people. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not even if I did it with Alex Jones and David Icke on the bill, we couldn't do it that way. You know, mm-hmm. So we obviously can't rule out that the technology is very important. But and I also foresee it being positive in the future that, you know, through different techniques, we'll be able to heal the earth again. And we'll be able to turn our intelligence and our science into something that's brilliant for all humankind, again, to live, you know, once we get around free energy and all these other modalities.
Yeah, you know, and go ahead.
No, I'm finished. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I think the reason why I'm raising that question is because the technology, and I absolutely agree, it can be used like everything else. There's two sides to everything. But I think that we have to understand and look at people anyway, have to understand and look at what's coming up, because unless you understand that, unless you get that part of it, you are going to be controlled, which is how it's being used on a large scale by the powers that be, because obviously they have more control over things. So from that perspective, I'm looking at it in that sense, because conveniences, in my opinion, is probably going to be the detriment to some point with all the robotics that's coming up. I mean, you look at the commercials, you look at billboards, there are robots everywhere.
The cyborg culture is being put before us in comics, in children's programs, on the media, as you say, and even mainstream movie after movie is being made to insinuate that it's almost like, oh, you don't want to be human. Being cyborg is so much cooler. It's so much better. And, of course, your conscious mind will go, ha, 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 that's just science fiction. It's the media doing their little thing. But subconsciously, you might be very subconsciously attracted to an image like that, especially if your own troublesome emotions, you know, are troubling you so much that you, in fact, are, in a way, ready and willing to, you know, in other words, go down that road. And also, if these kinds of people that are in the elite of this technocratic elite, they're a technocracy, if they're able to, you know, spin and dupe you into thinking, well, you know, we're only doing this for your own good. We're only doing this to cure cancer. We're only doing this to make your kids way smarter. We're only doing this so that, you know, there'll be no disease in the world, you know, or whatever. Hey, aren't you going to fall for it? I mean, aren't you going to think, oh, it's so benevolent. Let's undersign all of these millions. Not that they need your actual signature, which is the most important thing. These guys are Knights Templar. They're going to go ahead and do exactly what they want to do. But they do also have, like I said, there's a pact going on. Like you said, it's a ballet. It's a dance. They also do want to tell us, the slave, the serf, what is coming. And they also kind of want our sort of endorsement of it, and we might give that if it's presented in this duplicitous way. And the thing that the audience needs to remember is that these people are master diplomats. They're absolutely brilliant at lying, at being able to present something to you and present it to you in such a way that you do think it's absolutely vital and needed. And, you know, they're brilliant at pulling on the heartstrings. They're brilliant at creating these emotional subtext. so that you think that, oh yes, I don't want my children to grow up in a world where there's, you know, Alzheimer's or whatever, or, you know, or other kinds of genetic horrible diseases and so on. So I'm going to let these guys go and tinker around here with the God gene. You know, I'm going to let them dig around in the people's consciousness and bypass any questions of psychology, that everything comes down to simple scientific building blocks. I'm going to let them mechanicalize us and regard the human being as just a thing that you can plug in to a cyber world for to fix it, that there is no psychological cures. It's all a matter of the right pill at the right time. You know, and here we have this smiling depressives that the philosophers of old spoke about. Here we have this cybertronic world, or what's also known as the post-human world, on its way. And they're seducing you by this whole thing. First of all, they create the very diseases with one hand, right, through the pollution and the pharmaceuticals and the chemtrails and all the other poisons that they've injected into our body politic and into the world, not only into consciousness, but physically. They first create these horrible cancers through the AMA and the FDA, and then come up, the other puppet, the other hand puppet comes up and says, hey, terrible this, isn't it? Hey, we got all these cures. We don't look at the DNA as the ancients looked at it, as some sort of, you know, extension of consciousness. No. This is just the gears and the levers. This is just the chemical soup from which we all came, and we're allowed to get in there and tinker around, you know, because we're the gods. We're the gods of the technochronic age. And in fact, in future DVDs, we're going to be going into this concept a lot, that these individuals may even be on the verge of replicating nature itself in some sort of cybernetic and virtual way, in which they inhabit a virtual kingdom in which they make themselves lords. I know it sounds far-fetched, but these people are literally so divorced from their own humanness. And of course, this ties back to the whole, you know, concept I've spoken about in my work about the alien DNA that's in all human beings. But even if we leave that aside, let's just understand it from a purely Freudian, Jungian point of view. These people are psychotic. They're megalomaniacal. And when they find ordinary life either too banal or too difficult or too stressful or too traumatic, these individuals are quite capable of using technology to manufacture a completely different virtual kingdom in which all things are possible, and then somehow plugging your brain into it. And ultimately, they consider the brain nothing but a machine, that it's only a matter of time before they find the method of plugging it into the organic computer, you see. This is what's coming down on us tomorrow. But my biggest, why I'm into this personally myself, and this has to be brought out, because there's other people who are talking about this, but they keep leaving a very important part out. Yes, this might be what the technocratic, you know, elite are thinking, these fathers of science. And in one way, you can't even blame them, because I don't blame a psychopath. I mean, when you look at these people and you study their personal lives, right down to their body language, I mean, you often see these people as that they should be locked up. You know, it's a miracle that they're walking the streets and have a degree, and that they even have been able to, you know, get a funding, because these people are, in my opinion, utterly psychotic, right? But let's leave that aside. The point being that I still then say, what is it in the human being that might walk happily into this digital purgatory? They're not going to cajole you. They're not going to, you know, prod you. They're not going to, you know, put a gun to your head and go enter into this digital kingdom, sacrifice your humanity, and it's come into our, you know, utopia, this futuristic cyber technology, you know, utopia. Man, I feel, is going to walk into it because he's already so utterly riddled with stress, riddled with angst, so utterly dysfunctional in his life, dysfunctional in his relationships, clueless when it comes to, you know, living, so utterly divorced and severed from his traditional roots, his racial and national ties, etc., 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 and so basically strung out spiritually, so existentially vagrant, so existentially naked, he may in fact be lining up to say, yeah, I want to try that. I'm ready to divorce my spirit, because that spirit and all those emotions, they brought me nothing but problems and trouble. And you're telling me, and I see the person who's going, Michael, you're talking nonsense. Those people better start looking at the pharmaceutical, you know, demographics and the statistics about the kind of drug use of, and I'm not talking about illegal drugs, I'm talking about the pharmaceutical drugs here that people are stuffing down their throats. They can't wait for the next happy pill to come along. They better start looking at the recreational drugs that is being done on the, and I'm not talking about punks on the street corner, but on the white collar level, you know, on the upper echelons. Yeah, the people are, you know, strung out there.
You've raised
an entire,
we got an entire Dionysian culture in front of us that oozes through the television. It's working its way through the penthouses of the privileged. And it's only a matter of tomorrow when we're walking in Free Jack. You know that movie Free Jack or Blade Runner? We are literally steps away from that kind of plug me in, turn me on, tune me out reality. Absolutely.
I am thrilled that you said everything you said, Michael, because that is what I absolutely wanted to pull out of you, because I so realize what is going on, and everything you've said is absolutely so right on, and we could do 3 hours of discussing absolutely what's going on with human consciousness and the interception of people's emotions, because that's where it's all being regulated from, and people need to understand this is all science. That is very important. You have to get that this is science, and all that fluff stuff that's being put forth is just to keep a wool over your eyes, so you're happy with that. Michael, there's a question that just came in, and it's from Thomas in Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning. It says, good morning, Michael. You sound a lot like David Icke. Can you tell us something about the presidential campaign in the United States? Why is there a need to run a African-American candidate at this time? Barack Obama could be the next president.
Well, I don't think that America is infinitely too racist to ever put a black candidate as president, if you want my honest opinion, because I face facts. I face reality. It just will not happen. It just will not happen, because America is still, for all the positive things that have happened there, ultimately is it still an incredibly bigoted and racist place, and we're still miles away from the point when that will happen. Having a candidate run, that's a different thing, because that's a token thing. It's good for left-wingers to feel that, hey, things are progressing and things are moving forward. Ultimately, my message, if you really want my honest opinion, is I couldn't care less what the color of the skin is of a politician. To me, they're all as corrupt one to the other, and that this is just part of their little game to make a lot of people who are well-meaning Americans and maybe left-wingers or right-wingers feel that things are moving forward. Hey, isn't this wonderful that we got a female candidate and we got a black candidate? And I just look at that and just, almost you want to laugh. You would want to cry if it wasn't so funny, or you would want to laugh if it wasn't so tragic. It's like, what is this all about? It's so meaningless. The color of the skin does not matter. That man does not represent the blacks of America.
You said some powerful things.
why don't they go and put Louis? If they said, hey, we're going to make Louis Farrakhan, president, hey, then Michael might look up and go, things may be truly changing, Not that Louis doesn't have some, sides I don't agree with either, but, the point is, Obama, forget it. The guy's a shill. He has he's under control of exactly the same forces. And, I'm sorry if this rubs people up the wrong way, because I know people have hopes. I understand that. I know that on paper it looks wonderful to have him there. But unfortunately, you've got to do your homework, America, and find out that these people are still bought and paid for by the same coterie that runs the rest of the criminals up there.
Yeah, and what's interesting, though, is the focus of the media on a black candidate and a female. That alone, I think, for me, was very obvious, because that is constantly thrown at you. And it's like how many black voters, how many white voters. I mean, it's very obvious. It's just thrown at the psyche. It's thrown at the psyche. Whether you are a racist, if you're a racist, it hits you in the manner in which it's intended to hit you. So I think there you can see the manipulation again. So,
But when I also say that, America is racist, don't get me wrong. What I mean is that America is still controlled. And I'm not really talking about the mass of American people, because the mass of the American people don't vote. So I wasn't referring to them when I talk about, whether they'll vote in a candidate like Obama or not. Right. The American people have no say in this matter. It's whether they were racist or they're not is not the point. I'm talking about the white elite that think of the average American as an underclass, as much as they think as the American black is an underclass, okay? So let me make that very straight. The average American person is a hopeful, decent, hardworking individual who has often left his prejudice out of his daily life and has woken up to certain things. The people I'm talking about who control the world and control America are the most deeply racist, deeply bigoted, utterly misogynist, murderous,
criminal scum on the face of this earth. And if you suddenly see that they've manufactured something to put a white person up there, a black person up there, you can better believe that person is still white on the inside. I don't care if they, put a Native American Indian up there or whatever they put up there. You can better believe that person serves them. You couldn't even get close to these thrones of power without being utterly bought and paid for by them. And that goes for a lot of other candidates. I usually myself don't even get into this area or, comment about it, but, I'll answer your question as much as I can, whether people agree with me or not, but, that's basically my philosophy, is that the whole political system is rotten from A to Z.
Oh, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Now, I want to ask you, in terms of the religious aspect, I know there's a quote I have here. Those called Islamic extremists are funded by the same hidden hands that fund the Zionists and the fundamentalist Christian evangelists. Israel, dear people, the real Israel, has little to do with either religious Jews or the Torah, just as Christ has little to do with modern Vatican-style Christianity of American evangelism. Now, we understand there is mass control in terms of even people's religious, for lack of a better word, because that's what people are pushed into or controlled into is the concept of religion, not consciousness, not spirituality. In the sense of that control, what do you have to say on that? In the sense of the control through Christianity or any other religion?
Well, man has been controlled by two forces basically for the last, several thousand years. And that is autocracy, which is a monarch. And the monarch has the troops and the police system. It's an autocratic control. And then there's theocratic control, which is religion. In secret society terminology, they often use the cross and the crown, cross being religion, crown being monarchy, or the double-headed eagle, you see, which also represents these two forms of control over the same party. So we have to realize that they both serve the same nucleus. These are just two tentacles that serve the same octopus, And it's not that street-level religion. People can be religious, but institutions are not religious. So these institutions are basically syndicates. They're basically syndicates that operate for power, wealth, and money, and the control of human minds. And they have been for centuries able to manufacture a lot of these religions. Back in the Old Testament times, they divided the Pharisees from the Sadducees, you see. Then later you have the Jews from the so-called Gentiles. People don't even ask what these terms really mean or even if they were legitimate. But you don't even have, even before you get to that level, can't we see that there's been so much schism, so much dialectics in place? Then you have the Catholic v. Protestant. Then now we have the Christian v. the Muslim, you see. And can't people understand that this is all manufactured? Catholic v. Protestant, which is what I grew up in, the conflict in Northern Ireland, and I was able to work out that it was, in fact, a faux conflict. So all of these conflicts are manufactured, and it's referred to in Freemasonry as ordo ab chao, which simply means, order out of chaos. They create chaos, they create a confusion, they create a dialectical situation in which faux enemies are created so that they can then move their particular agenda ahead. And that agenda is the New World Order. It's been written on, by some very, very brilliant people. And this is what we try to teach, is a very simple process that it doesn't mean that you have to stop being religious in your private life. It doesn't mean that you have to stop, believing in God or any of this stuff. We're not talking about what you're doing on your personal level. We're talking about what these institutions, these bastions of power are doing and what they're capable of doing and what they have done. And that they look at all people as serfs. Now, it can be proven, absolutely, that there are ties between the Vatican and the creation of Islam and the whole movement of Islam. Muhammad himself was connected to the Vatican, and that has been gone into. The whole cult of Islam, there are direct ties to the Vatican. There's also the Zionist Judaic system is also connected to the Vatican through the symbolism, through the word roots, and through official history. Absolutely, the connections are there. And that's what the kind of stuff we, talk about in our work. If people want to visit my DVD series and all of the work that I've done, we have the evidence for all of this. We see also... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Michael. I want you to finish that.
Well, just I was actually, I'd come to mind was the, eradication of the Protestant pastors of America by the Jesuit conspiracy. The Jesuit conspiracy, which a lot of people might think is a Catholic conspiracy, which is not the case. The Jesuits are as much an enemy of ordinary Catholics as they are of Protestants. But the fact of the matter is there's been a sabotaging, you see, of all of the legitimate, originally, Protestant pastors whose job was to stand up in their churches and warn their congregation about these various conspiracies coming out of Rome and the various secret societies that were involved. You'll never hear that today when you go into these Protestant, evangelical places, because, of course, all of those people are now bought and paid for. The real guys have been pushed aside, which is an incredible story, by the way, of how that happened down through the years. And there's people who are experts on that and have written on that. And the removal of all of these pastors who are there to educate their congregations by giving them literature and putting them on the right path, you see, they're all gone. They're all sabotaged and compromised. And now you have the screaming lunatic evangelists that you find on all of these channels. And if you look at the symbolism that's being used, and if you see the drivel that they're talking, and the misrepresentation of the Bible and so on, and all of this nonsense, this pro-Zionist garbage that they're spilling out, people, you know, educated people will see that there's not a shred of truth in it. They need to find out who these pastors are, who they work for, and not just laugh it off as if, okay, well, these guys are mad, let's forget about it. No, these people are connected to very powerful organizations and secret societies like the Knights of Columbus and to the Zionist movements and many other orders and organizations. And that's why you'll find people like Pat Robertson and all these others on their knees in front of the British crown. That's why you'll find, if you track his lineage back, as we've got the information on our websites, find out who he is and where his lineage comes from. And why even funds from the Katrina disaster were, you know, from FEMA were funded into his organization. And why it is that he, you know, is so well in with all of these Zionist orgs that are riddled throughout America right now, all bent on taking away the sovereignty. But before people jump and say, okay, it's a question of just, you know, Zionistic conspiracy, they got to realize, no, wait a minute, who created the State of Israel? Where did that come from? Wasn't it British politicians in London who first saw to the fact that Israel would get created? Why would they want to do that? And how does this tie into the British royal family and all of these things, you see? So in my work, like in my book on Irish Origins of Civilization and the DVDs, we're actually talking about the true enemies of America, who are an elite, who would make racism, the average racism that we have seen and we've experienced in normal history, they'd make that look pale in insignificance. Most of that is just a bunch of lunacy, really, stupidity. The kind of racism that's in the people I'm talking about can never be removed by argument. These people are bloodline, but bloodline related to the most powerful dynasties that come out of Venice of the 1500s, you see, and out of Egypt of 1400 BC, and from the Dragon Court, what's called the Brotherhood of the Serpent, the Brotherhood of the Snake, that goes right back into pre-dynastic Egypt and further back into that, into the what's called the pre-Diluvian Age. These people haven't gone anywhere. They're absolutely still ruling the world. Their descendants still rule the world, and their symbolism is one of the ways to prove this. The etymology, meaning the terms and words that they use, the colors, the symbols, all sorts of regalia that they employ. And these people are now absolutely moving in for a United States of Europe. We're in the process of having, you know, a United States of Europe, the old imperialist monarchy back again.
Michael, we only have a few minutes, but I want to get another question in. Greetings, Sonia and Michael. How does a highly evolved or spiritual, centered and empowered being exist within the current matrix? Are economic seasons inserted into the matrix to create and feed off of our fear? How can we purchase Michael's DVD, which we also need to get to? We also need to get to all of your information. So can you answer that in a short couple of minutes?
Yeah, I mean, what you do is it's like the old Joseph Campbell idea. And that is, you can either allow your mind to be traumatized. Remember, it goes back to our whole question of, yes, X is doing something to you, but you are also involved about how much you let them do unto you. You see, if you have a psychic immunity and true psychic sovereignty, the question never arises of you being victimized. The victim has an attitude of victimization. This is what it's all about. Because people who've even been chained to dungeon walls can be freer than men who are walking around. What's dangerous in our world is that we're walking around believing that we are privileged, sane, logical, rational, and free, when in fact we're not. So first of all, the person who's in that kind of delusion hopefully should, you know, wake up to realize, wait a minute, we're not free, we're not independent, we're not sane, we're not clean, we're not rational, and try to work on, you know, on making themselves that way. In that process, the tools will be given to you as to how to keep these external viruses, you see, out of your body politic, and then maybe, if you're lucky, to try and help the rest of humanity. But people shouldn't be jumping over the gun to think that they can serve other people or help other people get out of dependence when they themselves are basically dependent or chained. So this is what I also have to say, is that you have to divide this enlightening process into two parts. There's the subjective development of the self, which is absolutely the key thing here. And then there's people who choose not to do that, but immediately to run through some charitable or altruistic motive, you see, to immediately start assisting other people. That will not work. That in fact has been what people are doing. They have negated working on themselves. They've negated strengthening their own psychic immunity. And then they plunge into let's say for argument's sake, the political arena or even the charitable arena, and think that they're going to then, you know, fix the world or re-hardwire people's minds and emotions. And then they come up empty after maybe 20, 30, 40 years of work like this, and nothing in the earth has ever changed, as you can see, people complaining that the world is getting worse, and they're right, it is. So, yeah, well, because the answer is you walked out there into that world naked. You walked out into that world without the true spiritual tools. So, like Joseph Campbell said, you find your own bliss, you work on your own psychic immunity, and that is how you live in this or in any other environment. When you yourself are so inherently strong that no external virus, no matter what kind of form it comes in, can have any negative consequence to your essential nature.
Absolutely. Michael, we probably have about 3 or 4 minutes. There's other questions coming in, but first I want to get you to give out your information. You have so many websites. If you can give the information that is, you know, pertinent and easy access to what you have to offer.
Sure. Well, people can just go straight to one website. That's michaeltessarian.com. And from that navigation page, they'll be able to visit all the other sites. You know, on the Atlantis book or the Irish Origins book, or as we started our interview on the Architects of Control website, architectsofcontrol.com, and check out what we're doing this year with that series. As I said, the first one should be coming out sometime in April, you know, and we've got a little preview there for people. And also, as we said, that's a lead-on. That's a sort of a continuation of an a talk in Los Angeles that I did, and that's called the 2012 and the Future of Mankind. If they come to my forum, they'll see the links through to, you know, be able to go onto Google and watch that. It's like 3 hours long, so they can see that. And we've got many, many other free web streams and free interviews and free writings up there for people to look at, you know, who may be interested in any part of what we've been talking about. You know, so just go straight to michaeltessarian.com and use that. You can get everywhere from there.
Okay, Michael, I'm going to squeeze one more question in. This question is coming from Grenada in the West Indies, from Solia. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Who controls the Illuminati? Why does Roman Catholic Church discourage their members from joining Freemasonry? Now, I don't know if you can answer that in 3 minutes, but there's the question.
Well, you know, she needs to get the book, because I go into this in the Irish Origins of Civilization book. First of all, it's a complete and utter lie. It's only a public relations spin that, you know, Catholicism forbids people joining Freemasonry. I cannot even end by telling you how many popes and cardinals were not only members of the Knights of Columbus or Knights of, you know, Malta. In fact, the Knight of Malta headquarters, this is an Illuminati enclave, the Knights of Malta. Their headquarters is in Rome, right in Vatican City. So people need to, you know, that's a smokescreen. Of course, the crime families will love to spin that for you so that you go to sleep and forget that there's any connection between these Freemasons and, you know, the Vatican. And they have many high-budget programs and films and documentaries to try and tell you, dupe you, into thinking that there's no connection. But you can absolutely bet that's an utter and total lie. That so many, if we had more time, I could even give you the names. You know, we thoroughly covered this in the book, that many popes, right from the 14th century and before that, were members of Knights Templar, Knights of Rhodes, Knights Hospitallers, and more recently, the Knights of Columbus that was created in 1926. The Jesuit order is also very much responsible for the creation of the Illuminati. When the Illuminati was created first, it appeared to be on paper an anti-Vatican, anti-Catholic order. That was a ruse. That was a very, very cunning ruse, because there already was legitimate anti-Vatican orders beginning, and the Vatican knew that its sovereignty or its power was going to be threatened. So it did a beautiful thing. It created its own nemesis, funded with its own money and with its own people in charge, to attract all the dukes and the princes and the intellectuals who were getting sick and tired. This is particularly after the time of the reign of Henry VIII. People will remember that the Vatican didn't allow him to, you know, marry who he wanted. So there was a lot of disgruntlement against the popes and the establishment of Rome. And Rome, sensing this, having its fingers on the pulse, realizing that its dominion was going to be challenged, came up with a brilliant idea of having Adam Weishaupt, this is a member of their own order, create what appeared to be a anti-Vatican order, when in fact it was entirely founded upon by these people. So that then when all the dukes and princes and young men and revolutionary types of being, you see, all these men start joining the Illuminati, little did they know that their every action was being monitored, all their prejudices was being noted, and more importantly, all their money that they were funding into the Illuminati, thinking that they're going to change the world for the good and that they're going to be illumined ones and that they're going to be an age of enlightenment coming. Well, that Age of Enlightenment never came, did it? And the reason is because the order that they were joining was fraudulent from the start. It took all their money. And then because a lot of these dukes and princes from all over the world who were joining Illuminati were already Freemasons, that is how Illuminati became, you know, infiltrated Freemasonry. It wasn't really so much that the Illuminati infiltrated Freemasonry. It's more a question that of so many Freemasons joined Illuminati that in the end you could say that they were both the same. This is how it happened. And through the Grand Orient Lodge of France, which at that time was run by the Duc d'Orléans, like Orleans, like New Orleans. Well, the real Orleans is in France, and the Duc d'Orléans, which is an extremely powerful figure, was one of the heads of, you see, the Grand Orient Lodges of Freemasonry. So we're not indicting all Freemasons when we talk about these kinds of subjects, just like we're not indicting all Catholics when we talk about the Jesuits, or we're not indicting all Jews when we talk about, you see, the Zionists. This has to be also made very, very clear. We're not finger-pointing here. We're talking about the enemies of all mankind. And these individuals from the Grand Orient Lodge, tying in with the Illuminati, eventually it became one big Freemasonic, you see, Leviathan, that is absolutely operating in America today through the Scottish Rite Order, through the Mormon Church, and through so many other orgs that they control.
Well, Michael, I will definitely be getting together with you on email later on to schedule a part two, because we definitely will need to do that, because now we're out of time. Yes, you said a lot, and everything so inspiring and so necessary. Again, could you give out your website address? I don't know that there's a phone number. I know you're in Europe right now, so if you could just give out your website address one more time.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's michaeltessarian.com. And I got about 7 websites. Some are under construction. Others, we got tons of information. And even to get to the forum, people are welcome to come on our forum and leave comments and also check out the many brilliant links we've got there. Everything we've been talking about is all referenced. And many of the references are actually on the forum. So if they come to the forum, they can check out the references to this. They can go to my Taroscopes website, which has a links page, which there are many references there. We have book lists, you know, all there published on the web, and many, many sources. I would suggest that people do go and watch the LA talk that I did, the Google, because there's lots of sources there, a lot of background. So, because I don't want a single human being out there to just take me on face value, because I could be just, you know, totally not being accurate. People in this subject, beyond all other subjects, they need to study this themselves. They need to go sift through the information, you see, and decide for themselves whether what people like myself and David's a very good friend. We've worked together many times. We have several points of, you know, agreement, and we got other areas where we're not so, you know, in agreement, whatever, but we're all doing the same kind of work in a way. And they need to go through our information very objectively and work it out for themselves, not just believe it passively what people like myself are saying, you know. And that's why we have these websites, and they can do that. They're welcome to do
okay.
it.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I also want the audience to know that the program will be rebroadcast later on tonight at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we will definitely be having Michael Tessarian back for a part two, so be sure to look on the website and stay updated, and we'll update you as well as in terms of the date for that. Michael, thank you so much for being here. You've been wonderful. Thank you for the work that you do, and continue to put yourself out there to present this information. To the listening audience, you may email me, sonia@sovereignmindradio@yahoo.com, or you may contact me at 949-249-3825. And remember that the power to be a sovereign mind, a free mind, lies within you. Join me next Wednesday at 7 p.m. For our next guest. You say that you want